I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And you know the drill. If you're one of our patrons, this is your extended, ad-free and higher quality version of this week's show. And if you're not a patron but would like to get in on those ad-free, extended, higher quality versions, as well as interact and listen live with us as we record, head to patreon.com/UK Tech. And thank you to everyone who is currently sitting in the chat room waiting patiently to do just that right now. And thank you to Alistair Mitchell for being our most recent patron. Alistair, it's great to have you with us. Thank you ever so much for deciding to join us on our podcasting journey. We're going to get into the news ever so shortly, but breaking with tradition, I'm going to jump very quickly into a very short email that we had come in over the last few days in response to an email from listener Kate about how people deal with their phones being essentially devices of mass addiction. This came in from Rich. He said, enjoyed hearing about Kate's experience of going social media cold turkey. I found switching off notification banners and badges for social media apps to be an effective tweak. When I spot a banner on my lock screen or see the little red dot on my home screen, it's almost impossible for me to resist tapping through to the app. Once that banner or badge stops showing up, the psychological cue to open the app is no longer there, and I'm less likely to end up getting drawn in. I have to admit, at first I found myself opening the app to check whether there were any notifications waiting for me, but over time, that desire gradually wanes. Looking forward to hearing other tips. And the reason I wanted to point that out is because I do exactly the same thing, and it is an incredibly effective way of slightly disconnecting the part of your brain that causes anxiety and stress and annoyance sometimes from being triggered by apps.
I also disabled notifications for email, and it's changed my life.
It does, doesn't it?
I realised that I didn't need to know when an email came in, and that if I wanted to see if I had email, I could do what I used to do back in the day and open the app and have a look.
It serves absolutely no benefit to have a little icon saying 300 unread emails or whatever, because I know I've got hundreds of unread emails because I don't have enough time to read all my emails. So being told that doesn't make me any more productive or grateful for the technology.
No, absolutely. And I do think that turning off notifications in general is actually a really good idea. I just don't see the point of being told every time something happens. And absolutely right. You know, I can always go in and have a check if I'm curious.
Well, Pangolin Sandwich in the chat room says, I've never had notifications or counters and it makes no difference to me, which is a shame. But maybe other things have made a difference to you. So we're keen to expand this conversation. As always, let us know, hello@techpodcast.uk, what methods you use for making sure that your devices are helping you and not hindering you in their daily ways. Let's get in with the news, Ian. You may have heard about HS2. This is the government's £55.7 billion high-speed rail network currently under construction, which will directly connect London, Birmingham, Manchester, Leeds and the East Midlands. You may have heard of it, actually, partly because its chairman has said he expects to be sacked in the coming days, less than like 5-6 months before he took over the role, according to The Guardian. But what you might not have heard amidst all the gossip is that two of the main manufacturers bidding to manufacture the trains for HS2 have said that they expect Amazon parcels will be able to be delivered to customers directly at their seat whilst they're on their journey. The Telegraph wrote this week that spokespeople for both the companies had said they don't imagine it'll just be Amazon products either. They suggested commuters could also order their breakfast or their meals from a preferred provider, which would be waiting for them at their seat. Customers could also order parcels ready for collection at any station they're passing through midway on their journey. Canada-based Bombardier and Japan-based Hitachi said they are in early talks with delivery companies to develop this kind of technology, according to The Telegraph. Now, this sounds like a tremendously good idea. Ian?
Really?
Go on. You're obviously not so convinced.
I just don't think it's necessary to have parcels delivered literally everywhere.
Yeah, I can tell you're incredulous. Well, let me give you an example of why this might be helpful. So about I don't know, 2 years ago, I was traveling, admittedly, on a plane, and it is harder to get in flight deliveries from a plane, although not impossible. They do have in-store shops. And I'd lost my headphones. It turns out they were in my inside jacket pocket, and I just didn't think to look there. Nonetheless, I didn't have any. And at that very point, I thought, I wish I could get some new headphones, a specific brand that I wanted. That would have been great. What I ended up having to do is buy one from the inboard shop, and I found the whole experience to be, although very convenient, kind of frustrating and annoying that I could only get this very limited, tiny little selection.
Yeah.
The potential to lose something and then at the next station possibly being able to pick them up or have something replaced, if that is indeed how it ends up working, I think is very, very compelling, you know, and mask.
Well, I mean, I sure, for the one time it ever happens to you.
The one time, yes, but there are always other times. I mean, what I was going to use an ink cartridge example because that's what I used for Amazon Prime for the other day. It's very unlikely that I ever need an ink cartridge on a train, but there could be other examples. You could be on your way to a meeting, you've forgotten something. I'm struggling to think of what that thing would be. No, I'm beginning to agree with you actually now, mate.
That's the thing. It does seem like I can see what you're saying. I can see that, you know, for the example you're thinking where, okay, so you're on your way home, you've forgotten to buy a birthday present for someone. You think, I know, I'll go on Amazon, I'll have it delivered to me when I get to Manchester. I mean, yes, I can sort of see the logic behind that as an idea. However, I just don't think I want to be buying stuff for delivery en route. I can't see any advantage to having it on the train than having it at a destination. And if it's a destination, then you could just use an Amazon locker, and you know, because they may already have a locker in the place you're visiting. The ubiquity of Amazon deliveries is starting to wear a little thin for me, I think.
Do you remember in about the late 80s, Bill Gates said that 640K of memory was basically as much as anybody could ever feasibly need within a computer?
Yes.
Do you reckon there's a chance that down the line somebody will be doing a podcast saying, do you remember when Ian Morris said there's absolutely no need to have a shoehorn delivered directly to his train seat?
It's entirely possible.
I think you might be right. The thing is, though, this is talking about trains, but actually, this got me thinking a much more mass adoption way of using this technology, which is with self-driving cars. Now, I could completely see and envisage the same thing. I can totally envisage a situation where you are in a self-driving car, it's taking on a long journey, you fancy something to eat, you fancy maybe a new pair of headphones, maybe your kids are acting up in the back and they just desperately need a brand new Amazon Fire to keep them quiet, and you just order it, and an Amazon drone, which they're trialing now, just sort of appears next to your car, and you just grab it out the window, or it drops in through the sunroof. You know, that would be an incredibly convenient way of using in-transit delivery systems.
You are aware that they have actually already done that, aren't you?
Let's, for the purposes of advancing the conversation, say no.
No, because actually I did a demo in CES where that is exactly what they did. You would you'd be driving around in your self-driving car. You wouldn't have anything to do. You'd be bored. And the demo was this. You go in the tablet in the car, you go on Amazon, you order your Kindle and a box of chocolates, and then you agree a place where on your route where it's convenient for you to pull over. You pull over, and then a man from Amazon hands you a package, and that's you done. And I've got a video of that somewhere. So yes, they have literally done that, and that's their proposal. And
presumably the well-funded public relations department of Amazon did a demonstration of it at a giant technology conference. I remain skeptical, indeed very skeptical, that is something that's ever actually going to happen within the next decade.
Well, I mean, it's sort of made more sense if you think about it in terms of you're going shopping, you want some food, so you're driving down the M4 or whatever, and you think, I know, I'd like some food to go home with. You pull into a service station and there's a guy there with Amazon bags that puts them in your boot and off you go home. I can sort of see that. But again, most people are not going to have self-driving cars in the next 10 years. So it's kind of pointless.
My wife, also listening live in the chat room, just says, maybe stop just losing things.
This is, I mean, solid gold advice, I would say.
Yeah, it's sound advice. In fact, it literally is sound advice, since she's listening to us complaining. Well, what would you like delivering through the sunroof of your car, or as you pass through Birmingham International Station? Is that the name of the station? Who knows? If you know the name.
Yes, I believe so. Is this one?
I believe so. I think you go through it on the way to Leamington Spa from Macclesfield, as I used to do. But whatever you think you might find a use for this being in the future, do let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. US electric scooter rental company Lime has gone live for the very first time in the UK, but with electric bicycles rather than scooters, and this is interesting, Ian, in particular, in Milton Keynes rather than the perhaps more predictable capital city of our great nation. From Tuesday, this was last week, riders will locate and unlock Lime's bikes with a smartphone app, ride them a short distance, and then walk away from them when no longer needed. This is exactly the same as it works with their scooters, and indeed many company scooters. It'll cost £1 to activate, and then an additional 15 pence per minute of use. And this is all according to an extremely reliable source, namely me, writing for Bloomberg this week. As regular listeners will know, I'm pretty fascinated by the efforts that companies like Bird and Lime and others are having to make in order to launch their businesses in the UK. These are companies about 2 years old and valued at billions of dollars already, and they desperately want to grab as much market share as possible in as many cities as they can in order to win those markets. A little bit like we saw Uber do several years ago in order to become the behemoth that it is today. The problem is, it's still illegal to ride an electric scooter on public roads in the UK. So companies are trying to win favour in an effort, I think, to change that, but, you know, by launching in different ways. For Lime, that means launching its electric bicycle service so it can at least establish itself as a known entity in Britain and presumably show that it's well behaved and delivering a useful service that customers like and cities benefit from. Bird, on the other hand, did enter Britain with scooters a couple of weeks ago. Can't remember actually if we talked about this on the show. I think we might have done. But it did so in just one very specific place near Stratford in London, which meant the scooters could only be used on private land, which Bird had permission to do. That meant they wouldn't be breaking any laws as the pathways weren't public, but also meant they could start to try and show that people liked the service and that it's the kind of thing that can be operated safely. So that's what. So that two different companies, two different approaches to winning favour in what could be an enormous market for them, and frankly, one that is crying out for additional modes of transport other than cars and public transports and bikes. The question, Ian, that I have for you is, have you ever ridden an electric bike, or have you ever taken one of our city's municipal bikes, colloquial Boris bikes? Now, is the attraction there for you to have that electrified?
To some extent, yes. I have ridden both a Boris bike and I have had a test loan electric bike, which I was, but I enjoyed both actually. Electric bikes allow you to go much further, obviously, and they allow you to arrive somewhere much less sweaty. So for me, the idea of, say, I don't know, as a good example, I get to Waterloo, I discover the Jubilee line's shut for some reason, and I think, okay, well, I'll just hop on an electric bike. I'll arrive probably in not the dissimilar amount of time, and I won't be too hot and sweaty because the thing will power itself, you know, up hills and stuff like that. All I'll have to do is just keep going at a normal pace. So yeah, actually, I mean, I absolutely kind of get that. I think it's a pretty smart idea. I like it.
Andy in the chat room says not being sweaty is very important when you're in a suit going to work. And I completely 100% agree. I mean, I get sweaty enough just doing yoga in the morning and then going to the office. And that's right next to my office. And I have to say, I'm all in favor of this. I mean, I'm all in favor as anyone is who wants to see scooters become permitted. And if this is what companies need to do in order to win favor, then fair enough. But if you're listening to this in Milton Keynes, or if you're listening to this and heading to Milton Keynes, how about you do a little review of the service? I'd love to know what it's like, the onboarding procedure, as they say, and the general experience of using one. Maybe take a trip specifically to Milton Keynes. We can't cover your train fare, but we will pay you in kudos and airtime. Do let us know and send us any thoughts or recordings, of course, to hello@techpodcast.uk.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup. topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UK Tech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
This week, the BBC wrote that the price of a call to directory inquiries is to be capped, Ian, at 13.
Yes.
At 13? No, not at all. Far less than that. £3.65 for 90 seconds. These, for those of you who are maybe were born after 1990, are telephone services that people can call to get information, like train times or cinema listings or directions or how to bury a corpse. Because since 2008, you can actually ask anything to these services. So I'm sure someone has at some point asked how to dispose of a body humanely. It's basically Google Assistant or Apple's Siri or Amazon's female service. I'm avoiding using the name to stop triggering them, but down a phone line instead. But crucially for this story, and this, Ian, was completely new information to me, at a ridiculously high price, 118118, that's the popular one here in the UK. You dial that in, you ask your question. It costs £4.50 to make the call in the first place. It then costs you an additional £4.50 per minute, plus whatever cost per minute your phone network charges you. I'm on EE, so I looked up EE's prices. A 2-minute call from my phone to 118118 would cost me about £12. So if I was calling up to find the time of the times of a film at a cinema, it's quite possible that my call to find out that information would cost more than the ticket.
Well, I mean, not in London, but yes, I take your point.
Yes. Now, I had no idea these services were even still around. And indeed, it seems they are mostly used by the elderly who don't have the internet or access to a smartphone. And so the number of calls made to these sorts of services has apparently been falling by about 40% every year. But more than 1 million people still use them, according to the BBC, which is why the regulator is capping them. And that's a pretty significant drop. You know, if you were doing a 90-second call, 90 seconds, 2-minute call costing you £12, that's now going to cost you about £3.65. It's still a lot of money, but it probably brings it down to a level where if you're absolutely in a pinch or you're not calling it constantly, then it becomes viable. And I do think when I was doing the research for this, actually, that 118118 has a unlimited subscription service where you can actually pay an amount per month and have unlimited queries. So there is flexibility in the model. But for most people, calling once or twice a year, maybe it's an incredibly expensive way to do so.
Well, it is. But I mean, also a classic example, really, of what privatization can do to a service, because there is basically no stopping these people. They can charge what they want. I don't know why they're allowed to. Obviously, they're not anymore. But it's just absolutely crackers. It's disproportionately expensive based on what it would actually cost them to provide the service.
But the thing is, they're probably in one of these positions where something has become so much less popular than it was in the past, that the only way to remain in business is by making changes to the financial model or the business model. And I think they've done a couple of things. One, obviously, is the prices are just enormous. The second is that I believe almost everyone that you speak to when you call 118118 is based in the Philippines.
You know, really?
So it's outsourced. But the thing is,
it's not even a UK call center. So what? I mean, I'm not gonna test it. I just cannot afford to. But you know, is it good English quality? Would be my question.
Okay. Well, you know, there's no time like the present. I'm gonna go and get my phone. Hang on. Let's do this.
Right. Ask them where. What time the next showing of Wreck-It, Ralph Breaks the Internet is. That's a film that is currently showing.
How can I help you?
Oh, hello. Can you tell me the next time to see Ralph Breaks the Internet in Harlow, England?
I'm sorry, what's the name again, please?
It's a film called Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Oh, all right, sure. Whereabouts in Harlow, sorry, which cinema?
Any, to be honest. They're all quite close to me.
All right, I'm checking further. One moment, please. Is it for today?
Yes, please, this evening.
Thank you. All right, so there's one for Cine World at the Hollow Town Centre for Ralph Breaks the Internet. It's on tonight at 1800 and 2040.
Ah, that's perfect. That's great. Thank you very much.
And would you like to be connected to the cinema?
No, that's fine. I can give them a call later. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To be fair, that was pretty painless.
Yeah, I mean, you asked a question, she was able to ask it, answer it, and actually I have no real complaint. And it's important to remember that these services are generally being used by people who don't have access to the internet for one reason or another. Mostly that's elderly people. There will always be a place, especially if it's, you know, an actual person you're speaking to and that kind of thing. If you had a question that would be difficult to answer, I can see the value of it. I think it's overpriced, but at the same time, it is a valuable service staffed by a human. So, you know, I think the cap is right, to be fair, but, how much longer they'll carry on anyway remains to be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I still think that, I mean, that call that you just heard me make then will have cost me somewhere between £5 and £7, I think. Based
I mean, that
on,
is crackers, isn't it?
You know, what I didn't want to spend any more time on is asking how much the cost of that ticket was, because that would have sort of been even more expensive, but at least I know. And obviously, if anyone wants to go and see Ralph Breaks the Internet at Harlow Town Cinema, the cinema this evening, you can. So that's.
Well, I'm also quite interested in how they work, because it was quite quick. So I wonder if she's pressing, as you're asking questions, if she's pressing a series of buttons on screen that are custom designed for the kind of query it is. So, for example, as soon as you say, "I'd like to know when a cinema," when a film is on, she presses a button marked cinema, there's a list of films, she presses another one, whether or not that's kind of thing, or whether she's just literally typing it in as she goes, who knows? It's probably quite an interesting thing to see how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anybody wants to spend several hundred pounds and call them and ask them how their the logistical operation behind their job works, then please do feel free. Other calls are available. Now, the thing is, 118118, which is the one I was just using there, isn't even the most expensive. There's another one, a 90-second call to which will cost you about £20, according to the BBC. That's 118004. I think this conversation has probably run its course. But for those of you who are in the US and would like to compare this to whatever local service you have, by all means, please do. The most expensive one that we found was £20, which is about $25-$26 to do the call you basically just heard me do. So let us know any local insights, or from whatever your country of knowledge is, then let us know. hello@techpodcast.uk. Let's jump into the mailbag, Ian. Head first, if you don't mind, this week, I think.
Like Scrooge McDuck into gold.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely. Hi, Nate and Ian, and sometimes Andy. I've been listening to the show since episode one and love it. Well, thank you very much, Adam. My anecdote is regarding Google and how much data they want about me. I have had a Google account for many years, but don't tend to install a lot of apps on my phone. I've paid for a few apps in the past, but none recently. Having used the Podcast Addict app for years now, I decided to donate to the app and support the developer. I was surprised to find out that I'm unable to do that, as Google cannot verify my identity. I was shown a link to a page that asks me to upload an image of my passport or government ID. There are some examples given why they may want this information, but nothing specific to my account. There's also no way to contact anyone in Google to discuss this, either by text, email, or phone. I bought my daughter a tablet for Christmas, and I'm unable to add a child account to it, as it will not activate without a verified account. I've added a debit card and a credit card to the account. I'm using two-factor authentication. I've owned a number of Android phones, all using the same number, since the Galaxy S1. They have my email, my calendar, my location, my contacts, and my files. Do they have me over a barrel? Do I have any choice as to whether or not to send them my passport and proof of address? None of my friends have had this issue. So why me? Thanks for any advice, Adam. Now,
excuse me.
In the first instance, Ian, have you experienced this or heard anything about this?
No, I haven't actually. I found this very strange.
Yeah, it is indeed.
I mean, I am aware of money laundering, and I know that you do have to verify PayPal accounts in some way. I don't think it's quite as advanced. You don't need to send photo ID, but I definitely remember having to do something to verify my PayPal account that I can't remember what it was now. But so I'm a sort of aware of that being a problem, but not usually for standard stuff.
Well, Adam, two things we're going to do for you here. The first, obviously, is that anybody listening to the podcast who has experienced this would be highly encouraged to write in and give us an example of their experience or anything related to this. The second thing is I am going to strip away any identifying details and have a word with some people that I know at Google and see if I can find an answer out to this directly from the horse's mouth or the mouth of any obligate nasal breather you may wish to envisage me asking for answers. I'm going to go for horse, as that is the tradition.
That is the tradition.
And then we'll get back to you hopefully next week with a bit of an answer. So don't do anything too hasty until then.
Why would they be so funny about it when it's a relatively small amount of money?
Yeah, I mean, Andy in the chat room says when he signed up to PayPal years ago, he remembers getting a code through the post. And I actually remember that as well. But the thing with PayPal is that PayPal has to do a lot in terms of anti-money laundering. And yes, that's one of the reasons why it has to put people through a slightly additional set of hurdles or challenges in order to get verified. But for a Google
account...
Which
makes sense.
Complete. Yeah, I don't really have a problem with
that. Because you can pay people actual money. Like, it's an actual... You know, it's a person-to-person transfer. It's like being with a bank or something like that. I think of PayPal as being more of a bank than it is anything else. I suppose the only argument would be that Google might think you'd set up an app and then pay it yourself and use that money to get around paying tax. But there is really no way you could do that. And it would cost you so much in fees to do it, it wouldn't be worth it anyway.
Like a doctor specializing in the colon, we are going to get to the bottom of this, Andy, for you, and we will get back to you. So hang tight, remain on the edge of your seat. We will come back with answers, all being well. And if you have one of those answers, of course, do let us know, as well as any questions. hello@techpodcast.uk. Text message, of course, keeps you informed about the British tech landscape. But let's check in with our friends at Daily Tech News Show, Tom Merritt, in the US, and hear what's been happening in the wider world of global technology over the last 7 days.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we gave an explanation of Amazon's rising antitrust issues in the EU, talked about tech that soldiers use to keep in touch with their families, how a French ruling on GDPR could threaten the entire ad industry, depending on how it gets interpreted in the future, and Patrick Norton's audio gift picks for audio lovers. All that and much more at dailytechnewsshow.com. Back to you.
Thank you, Tom. In fact, our chat room says thank you, Tom, as well. To summarize, thank you, Tom. And thank you to our patrons supporting us every week. If you're not yet a patron but would like to become one, get our ad-free extended version of each week's show, listen and interact with us as we record live, as many people have been doing this week. And thank you to you guys for joining us too. All you have to do is head to patreon.com/UK Tech. And remember, nothing says happy Christmas or happy Hanukkah or happy whatever you celebrate during the December month than subscribing to our Patreon for a no-risk trial. Maybe you can help us finish this month with one more patron than we had last month.
Yeah, and one of the other things that makes us very happy is when you send comments to us, and it's hello@techpodcast.uk. You can follow us on Twitter @textmessagepod to keep up to date with the most important UK tech headlines throughout the week. And thanks to everyone listening to us on our free ad-supported feed. If you have a minute to leave a review for us on iTunes, it's the best way of supporting us without spending a penny.
And if you are absolutely craving some additional Nate in your ear diet, mixed metaphors there.
Crikey.
I know. Then simply listen to This Week in Tech. Today, I don't know what the episode number is, but I'm going to be on This Week in Tech with Leo Laporte. So if you're listening to this on probably Monday onwards, then you should be able to find an episode with me talking about hopefully a different range of topics to what you've just heard me talk about for the last 40 minutes or so. Until then, or until next week, from me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
We'll see you in Iron Vodka. That's 1 week.
Yes, it is.
You've been listening to Text Message with your host, Nate Langson. If you get value from the show, please consider joining our many supporters on Patreon. You can get access to a version of the show every week with no ads. and as much as 40% more discussion every time. There's no obligation, so why not try a month by going to patreon.com/UK Tech or looking for the link in this episode's description.